good morning to all of you. If you would, please turn to Exodus 20. And as you're turning there, I will tell you that there was one day when the teacher said to little Brenda, "How do you spell baccalaureate?" Little Brenda spelled it. The teacher says, "That's wrong." But little Brenda said, "No, it's not. That's right." The teacher says, "What do you mean?" "Your question was, how do I spell it?" That's related to the call that supposedly came into 911. "Hello, it's 911. What's your emergency?" "My wife is having some problems. I need an ambulance." "Where do you live?" "Live on Hydrangea Avenue. Can you spell that?" "How about I just drag her down to Oak Street?" You know?
Okay.
All right, so here's mine, guys. I thank God for my wife. His wife, for those of you who don't know, they have a ladies' tee that's in front of them.
Yeah. I've opened a bad door.
His wife's on one tee, he's back on the other tee, and he rears back, cracks one, hits her right in the side of the head, hits her in the temple, and kills her. Terrible.
My joke
was
better.
About 2 or 3 weeks later, he gets a call from who's the guy that does all the autopsies and stuff, whatever, the medical examiner. He goes, "I need to ask you something. You know, I realize it was a tragic death in your wife's bed. You're going to break your head with your golf ball. But in doing the autopsy, I found another golf ball, you know, that had hit her. What to deal with that? It was inside of her." He said, "Well, I had to hit a mulligan."
My joke was better. Okay. Let's see if we can turn ourselves back. Let's see if we can turn ourselves back to Exodus 20. I need very quickly to review where we've been, because we've got some things to do today. It's going to take a little while to do those properly. We have been looking at Exodus 20, which is the Ten Commandments. As soon as that is over, God is speaking the Ten Commandments. The first part of chapter 20, God spoke these words. The original giving of the Ten Commandments, God spoke those words. Verse 18, the people were so frightened and so scared by the voice, they said to Moses, "We can't ever hear that voice again and live. So you go find out what God wants. Whatever he says, we'll do it." What follows is that Moses goes up the mountain to where God is, and they have a conversation that lasts from the rest of chapter 20 through 21, 22, and 23, and actually the first couple of verses of 24. I say it's a conversation, but if you take a look, the way the scripture records it, it's God speaking to Moses. There's not a recording of any response that Moses gave. I feel pretty confident there were some responses along the way, but the Bible has not chosen to put those in if there were. In the third verse of chapter 24, you see Moses coming back down the mountain, following up some instructions that God had given him, having a conversation with the people. And in that conversation, he does three things. He reads to them all the things that God has said, the ones that he had said originally to the people, and now what he's heard on the mountain. He then goes and writes those things down. He then comes back and reads them to the people. So the people have heard the oral testimony. Now they have heard the written testimony. And after each of those, the people have said, "Everything God says, we will do." Moses then goes back up the mountain for a second conversation. Again, this time, what the Bible records is what God said to Moses. End of chapter 31, that's over. Moses comes back down the mountain. How long has he been gone? If you'll turn over to chapter 24, the last verse, how long was he up on the mountain the second time? 40 days and 40 nights. Okay? When he comes back down the mountain, what does he find? What was the first commandment? No other gods before me. What's the second commandment? No idols. What does he find? They're worshiping a false idol in place of God. How long was he gone? 40 days and 40 nights. What did the people say just before he left? "We're going to do everything God says." Everything. And they couldn't even do the first two things. Aaron's excuse is fascinating. Aaron is Moses' older brother. And Moses says, "What have you done?" And he says, "The people just gave me the gold. I threw it in the furnace and look at what came out." whole doesn't work that way. You have to have had some work done to have a golden calf come out. What we are doing right now is we're looking at those two conversations. We're aware of that interlude, and we're aware of the tragic events that Moses found when he came back down off the mountain. But right now, we're trying to look at those two conversations. Last week, we looked at the first of those. What was the subject matter? If you weren't here, you're off the hook. If you were here, you're on the hook. He's not looking up at me, is he? Yeah. What was the first of these two conversations about? The Ten Commandments has been given. Moses goes up the mountain. He has a conversation, comes back down, tells the people what he's heard, writes it down, reads it to them. After they heard it, they said, "We'll do it all." After he reads it, they said, "We'll do it all." What was that first conversation about? What were the subjects in there?
No idols,
slain,
and
so
it's about the worship of God.
Not really.
Right? Doing all
of it. I want a summary. What were the sort of the big topic areas?
Instructions.
Part of it was worship, but not very deep. Mm-hmm. And much of it was relationships. Mm-hmm. What happens if somebody assaults you? What happens if somebody donkey comes in and eats your corn? What happens if you find somebody doing thievery? What happens if somebody hits you? What can you do in response? It was some about worship, but not much. Important things, but not a lot of detail there. That's that first conversation, and that's what we talked about last week. There was some about worship, about the things that you bring and give. That's right.
But he was like the son, and the donkey was removed.
All those things that were in there. Now, we're coming to the second conversation, and that's what I want to focus on today. We know that chapter 32 is coming, but we're not going to go to it. We want to be aware that that's what's coming. So here's Moses on the mountain. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, all these things are happening. So the question is, you're supposed to have read at least through chapter 32. What's the subject of the second conversation? If you don't know, it's too late to look.
Who would do that?
Okay. The second conversation is an extremely detailed conversation about things having to do with the specifics of worship. It talks about how do you build a place for worship, a worship center. Depending on the translation, and even in my translation, it uses three different terms for this. You may see the word sanctuary. You may see the word tabernacle. That's the most common one. You may see tent of dwelling. And you may see, tent of meeting, and you may see dwelling. The dwelling, the tabernacle, the sanctuary, or the tent of meeting. There's at least those four terms in various translations that are used. How do you build it? What materials do you use? And it turns out those instructions are incredibly detailed. They are incredibly detailed. When you get finished with that, the subject begins to turn to the furnishings. In fact, they're mixed up. One particular piece of the furnishings is the first thing talked about, and then a little bit later it talks about the building of the worship center in which this object will be, and then it goes back to talking a little bit more about the furnishings, the other things that are there. Then it talks about who is going to serve as leaders during the worship time and in this worship center. And then it talks about the clothes they're going to wear and the vestments that they're going to wear as part of this. So it's lots and lots and lots of really tremendous detail. Now, I want you to see two or three things in this section as we get started. So I'm going to start in verse 1 of chapter 25. Exodus chapter 25. We're looking at verse 1. Okay? The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Tell the Israelites to set aside a contribution for me." Moses, go take up an offering. But look at the next phrase. Do you notice anything odd here? You don't go and shake your finger at the people and say, "You're supposed to give. Now, pony up." What does it say? Mine says, "You will accept a contribution from everyone whose heart prompts him to give it." Everyone is inclusive. Him is simply short. It's him or her. Accept a contribution from everyone whose heart prompts him to give it. What do these people have to give? They just escaped out of Egypt. What do they have to give? They plundered Egypt on the way out. The Egyptians gave them all kinds of things. They gave them gold. They gave them precious materials of all kinds, right? Accept a contribution from everyone whose heart prompts him to give it. Verse 3, and this is what you will accept from them. What are the first three items?
Gold,
silver, and bronze. If you're a chemist, you start to realize there's a certain level of metallurgical experience and expertise here. Because bronze is not easy to make. If you can find gold, it sort of makes itself. Same thing for most silver deposits. But bronze, there's some work involved there. And that defines a certain level of craftsmanship. If you read through this section carefully, you will eventually come to a very interesting point. God begins to talk about specific people who have skills with working with those kinds of materials that he's being asked the people to give. Names them by name. And he says, I have given them a special gift, the skill to work with these materials. Have you ever had anybody talk to you about spiritual gifts?
Yes.
Have they talked about preaching and teaching? Have they talked about prayer? Have they talked about maybe hospitality as a spiritual gift? Ever had anybody talk about metallurgy as a spiritual gift? Or the manufacture and work of textiles? This section is teaching you something. God gives skills to people in areas of craftsmanship. And most people who talk about spiritual gifts leave that off. Not everybody. There's a few that I've noticed have begun to pick up on this. God specifically says, I have given them the gift, the skill of, and then he names one or another of these things. So, what's the first group of things they're going to work with? Gold and silver and bronze, metals of one kind or another. What's the next group? Mine says materials. Yours says cloth and fabric. Mine says materials that are dyed. Aha! Dyeing is a skill. D-Y-E-I-N-G is a skill. And what are the dyes? Mine names three of these. Yeah, don't get down too far. Just those first three colors. Mine says violet purple, then it says red purple, then it says crimson. My name's three colors.
Blue, purple, and scarlet.
Yours says blue, purple, and scarlet. Okay? Blue, purple. How hard was it to find something that would dye a material blue? Do you know? You know where it came from?
It came from
a shellfish. One shellfish would maybe give you enough to dye a little section of material about that big. You'd have to have thousands of these shellfish. And there's lots of work involved in the art of dyeing materials, of getting the materials that can do the dyeing and then to have it done and have it done in a way that it's color fast where it won't run when it's washed and all that. There's some real skill involved in that. And apparently people had materials that were made from this. Don't know if they had the skills to make more, but they at least had some of these materials. Now, mine says the colors that they were dyed, then it names the materials. And mine starts out with fine linen, not just linen.
Yeah.
Fine linen. Anybody know the difference between linen and fine linen?
Thread count.
Thread count, right? You all know about thread count? Yeah, I learned about thread count one time. Okay. Mine says fine linen. It then says goat's hair. And then it says ram's skin. And then it specifies the ram's skin. That's the one that has to be dyed red.
Right.
And then it says fine leather. Now, I'm told in the first hour that there are some people who call this dolphin or badger leather, and I don't know that I know that detail. Mine simply says there's a word in there that is nobody knows how to translate, so somebody is if that's correct, somebody is making some seal skin. Hides of sea cows. Somebody said dolphin, somebody said, I didn't hear seals, but that's consistent.
Mine has beaded leather. It says the dolphin skin.
Mm-hmm. And then it says wood. What kind of wood?
Acacia.
Yeah. Acacia wood. Acacia wood. Not quite Arcadia, but I could see that's close. And then I have a semicolon, and it says oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil, and presumably fragrances for the incense. All those would be oil-based things. So you've got metals, you've got materials, which could be animal materials of some kind, or could be textiles of some kind, including dyeing and that sort of thing. And then finally, at the end, at the end you have oil and oil-based things, both for light and for spices and for fragrance.
Mr. Dolan, I have a question.
Yeah.
With these things, for me, I'm sitting here considering where they are geographically. So, Princess Smith on the Mountain, aren't they still in the desert?
Again, my picture is they have brought these things out of Egypt. As they plundered Egypt, they brought these things with them.
How would shellfish...
It's already, that's what I'm saying. The materials, I think, have already been dyed. All of that's been done. They're not looking at manufacturing the materials. They're looking at people making gifts of the materials, not the gifts of funds to go buy the materials. Or
to go travel to it.
Yeah. It's just saying, you've got them. The question is, are you willing to give them up?
Okay, because you were saying people have given the skills, so it's being recognized
as
people that have already had the skills and already done it.
No, I think the skill set they're talking about is working with the materials, which is different from producing the materials, in my mind.
So it
talks about they have skills of working with metal.
With materials that they've already brought with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the picture I have.
Because I was looking at...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not stop everything and let's go 1,000 miles away and bring it. No,
and
it's just they have it. Are you willing to let go?
That takes a skill, too.
You're slaves. You've never had anything precious in your life. All of a sudden, you have these precious materials. Are you willing to give them up? Are you willing to give them up?
Okay.
And the last thing he mentions are certain specific stones, which I assume are precious or semi-precious stones. And it names carillion and then just says other stones for mine. Mm-hmm. All of those are supposed to be given. All right. And what are you supposed to do with it? My verse 8 says, make me a sanctuary. That could be dwelling or tabernacle or tent of meeting. Make me a sanctuary so that I can reside among them. You will make it all according to the design for the dwelling and the design for its furnishings, which I will show you now. Where are they? He and God? They're up on the mountain. And he's getting ready to show him, right? Okay, hold that thought for a second. Turn over to the end of chapter 25. Look at the last verse, verse 40. What do you see? Here's God and Moses, and God says, I'm going to show you a design for the sanctuary and a design for its furnishings, including the things that the priests will wear and the implements and instruments that they will use. When you get down and start doing these things, make sure you follow the pattern of the design that you saw on the mountain. Saw on the mountain, that's right now. Mm-hmm. But in verse 40, he's looking forward to the time that Moses is going to be back down among the people, beginning to do this work. And when he says, when you do that, you got to remember what you saw up here. Everybody okay?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the end of verse 30 of chapter 26. Not the first, just the last. Chapter 26, verse 30. What do you say?
Set up a tabernacle according to the plan shown you on the mountain.
Same phrase again. Chapter 27, verse 8, last phrase. Three times he says, when you start doing this work, make sure you follow the design that you saw up here. Okay? Now, I'm going to try to connect two or three real, real big ideas that go across the whole of the Bible as we're looking through this. Hebrews says there's something happening here that you're going to miss if you're not careful. God is showing him something that is real, and he's asking him to go down the mountain and with the people build a copy. Where's the reality? That's what he's seeing. Hebrews says he's getting a glimpse of something whose reality is actually in heaven. I'm showing you the reality. Now you go build a copy. You got it? Make sure you work according to the pattern, the model, the plans. Blueprints, I think somebody said that must have been the message. I don't think they would have had blueprints in those days, but... Okay, you get this idea? Almost everybody thinks when Moses built the tabernacle, that was the original. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Where's the original? It's in heaven. And Moses, with God, was given a glimpse of that. He comes down, and what does he do? He builds a copy or a replica. I was in Kuşadası in Turkey. Boy, I love to be able to say that. We were there to look at the ruins of Ephesus. Blew my mind how extensive and how impressive those were. I hurt like crazy because my knee had started to act up that day and I was limping pretty badly. But I was in the middle of this just stunning, stunning ancient Roman city, probably the third or fourth largest city in the Roman Empire in its heyday. And we were in the ruins of it. You could see huge libraries and huge worship buildings and things like this. We came out of this just absolutely glorious, glorious place into a corridor in which the walking area was about the width of this room, and then the walking area was fronted by shops on both sides. The seventh or eighth shop on the right-hand side had a sign above it that I still think is the most spectacular sign I've ever seen on a shop. It said, and I quote, "genuine fake watches." Genuine fake watches. If you go on YouTube and look up genuine fake watches, you can see the shop. They have a YouTube video. If I think about it properly, I'll post a video of that little shop on the Discovery website where you get the lessons if you want to see those. What does it mean, genuine fake watches? Really good copies. That's what they were trying to say. Really good copies. But the word for such watches is replica. Right? There's an original and there's a replica. I looked at an Omega, I'm pronouncing it like James Bond did, an Omega Seamaster. They wanted 50 euros for this thing. And I think I could have bargained them down to 30. I didn't buy it. But it was a good looking, genuine fake watch. If I had bought this, would I have had an Omega Seamaster? Absolutely not. What would I have had? A genuine fake.
It didn't work by the time you got
it. Well, I don't know. It might have worked. I have a Rolex I bought in New York one time. I did. I actually pulled it out and looked at it last week.
I wore Rolex in college.
It looks pretty tawdry.
We all did.
It looks pretty tawdry. Yeah. Have I made my point? Where's the original? It's in heaven. What has Moses built?
A replica,
a model. He's built it to the pattern he saw so the people can have a physical reminder. You okay? I'm not sure I can tell you how big an idea that is. Most anybody you ever ask, Moses built the tabernacle. Where was the tabernacle? The tabernacle is what Moses built. No. In heaven, that's where the tabernacle was. Moses built a replica, a model, a reproduction of it. Are we okay? It's not to minimize its value or its significance, but it is to emphasize there was a physical representation of a heavenly reality that was involved here. Still okay?
Do you think that God gave Moses something to which he could refer when he is in the process of building all this and furnishing all this? Or was Moses gifted with a memory so acute that he literally had this impression in his brain that he was able to then communicate to his community?
I think Moses was given by God a special gift to help him remember. And what that was a memory. I think it's both of those. I think the memory he had was prodigious, and I think it was because God gifted him with it. Yes? That's a great question. How can we even know what God said to Moses? We're 4,000 years after this, and I can stand here and tell you with some degree of assurance, I think I know what God said.
Can you imagine what kind of Jimmy cooks in the kitchen? Can you imagine questioning, "No, don't do it this way, you must do it, you know."
But I want to make sure you remember, God singles out certain individuals and says, "I'm putting these guys to work alongside of you, to work under you, and they're going to have the skills to do everything, and I'm going to pass some of this skill on to you." I think he had a prodigious memory. I don't think there was something physical he came down the mountain with in the way of a model. But I think it was still a gift. Now, we're still here, right? Make me a sanctuary so that I can reside among them. You will make it all according to the design for the dwelling and the design for its furnishings, which I will show you now. And at that moment, I think something appeared, or he walked around a corner or something, however this happened. But then from then on, he's reminding him, now when you're doing this, make sure you work according to the pattern that's right in front. Everybody okay with that? Okay, now, what's the first thing he says to build? Verse 10. An ark. What's Moses' reply likely to be? What's an ark? Only ark I know about is a whole lot bigger than what you're talking about. And doesn't seem to look much like it. What's an ark? You don't hear that part of the conversation, but I have a feeling it was there. Make me an ark. What are you supposed to make? Try to get the gist of what I'm asking. What are you supposed to make it of? Acacia wood. What's its dimensions supposed to be? These dimensions. What else are you supposed to do? You're supposed to cover the wood with gold. What else are you supposed to do? You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do this. Detail, detail, detail. You're supposed to put rings on the outside and shafts, acacia wood covered with gold, so that you don't have to have the people who carry it touch it. There's something holy set apart about this, and right from the first, we're getting to the point where you can do that. The detail of worship that's coming is astounding. And that suggests to you worship should not be something that's put together at the last minute with a little thought. Worship is something serious. That's the big message. Let's dig a little deeper. Verse 14, by which to carry it, the shafts will stay in the ring of the ark and not be withdrawn. Verse 16, what does it say? Inside the ark, what are you going to put?
Testimony.
Mine says the testimony, and it's capitalized. Yours says?
Covenant document.
The covenant document. Are those capitalized?
No, they're not.
They're not. Huh. Anybody else? Does it say that? Really?
What is that?
The Ten Commandments. I think that's what it is. Yeah. Verse 16. Mine says the testimony. The other term I had heard was covenant documents. I hadn't seen that. I think that's what it is. Okay. And what does it say? Where does it say that's going to come from? Inside the ark, you will put the testimony which I am about to give you, my translation says. Turn to the last verse of chapter 31. What happens with 31? 31 is the last chapter before Moses comes back down the mountain and finds out the people have screwed everything up. Last verse of 31. What does it say? This is verse 18 of Exodus 31. When he, that is God, had finished speaking to Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave him the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone. And what does it say about them? Mine says inscribed, yours says written by the finger of God. Okay? I'm about to give you the testimony. Four chapters later, he gives him the testimony and it's finished. Everybody still okay? No, we're not. Yes, ma'am.
I'm looking up from a footnote and it goes back to Exodus 16 and the 34th verse. It says, as the Lord commanded Moses, Aaron put the manna in front of the testimony. So that's...
There is some argument about whether people who wrote the Bible were as worried about what came first and what came second as we are, but I think that's talking about something else. I think that may be talking about documents from Abraham and from others before the exile that they had preserved some way. But it's interesting that that term is there. I'll have to look that up later. That was chapter 16. I'll look at that later. Okay, everybody still okay? All right. Supposed to build the ark. What are you supposed to build it out of? Wood overlaid with gold, right? And what are you supposed to put in it?
The testimony.
What's the testimony? It's the two tablets that you're going to get at the end of three more chapters. So far, okay? Verse 17. What are you supposed to make now? Okay, yours says a lid. Yours says a cover. Some translation says. Yours says atonement cover. Yours says mercy seat. Mine says, you shall also make a mercy seat of pure gold. This isn't wood overlaid with gold. This is pure gold. And it's got dimensions. And you're going to make models of two great winged creatures, probably creatures he could see where he was. Make those of gold, put them at the two ends, make sure they're pointing, they're facing each other, make sure their wings are covering this thing. You're supposed to make a mercy seat, an atonement cover, a lid. Lid is uninspired. Atonement cover is powerful. Mercy seat is fascinating. Okay? Verse 21. You will put the mercy seat on the top of the ark, and inside the ark you will put the testimony which I'm about to give you. Verse 22. My translation starts that verse with the word there. Mm-hmm. There I will come to meet you from above the mercy seat, from between the two winged creatures which are on the ark of the testimony. I will give you all my orders for the Israelites. I want you to listen carefully. This is the second huge idea that's hanging here. What's the mercy seat? It's the cover, the atonement cover, mercy seat that covers the ark of the testimony. And God says that's the place where a line of communication is going to be opened between God and human beings. Has that line of communication been opened yet? No. Mine says, there I will or shall come to you. Right? Everybody okay? Yes or no?
I thought he'd already been communicating with Moses.
He has been, and I'm back to the problems of Exodus 16. Okay. I don't know how to communicate everything. All I'm saying is there is a line of communication, a special line of communication that is going to come when all this is done according to the design you saw on the mountain and when you've been faithful and have completed all this.
Will the communication be more two-way? Because right now it seems like God's giving instructions. I mean, is he saying this is going to be more of a two-way conversation?
Okay. Big thing I think you need to hear is this. With whom is God going to be speaking when that happens? It's going to be Moses at first, but after that it's going to be with the high priest. It's going to be with that succession. A channel of communication will open with human beings, not just Moses, but a channel of communication is open. All right?
Other than with the bush, this is only the second maybe indication of him communicating through something as opposed to directly.
Maybe. I hadn't thought about that. I invite you to turn to Numbers chapter 7. We have about 4 or 5 minutes left to do what took me 17 minutes in the other hour. Let's see how we do. Numbers chapter 7. Numbers chapter 7, verse 1. On the day Moses finished erecting the dwelling. Do you see that phrase? If you look at the last verse of Exodus, that's the same day. No. The book of Exodus ends with Moses erecting the dwelling. Numbers 7 begins with Moses erecting the dwelling. That's the same day. All of Leviticus and the first 6 chapters of Numbers are an insert that comes in to that place according to the Bible writer's record. But the end of Exodus and this are the same thing. What has happened between where we just were over in Exodus 25? By the time you get to the end of Exodus, Moses and the people have done all the things God said. They have built the dwelling, they built the furnishings, they got everything ready, and the day that he put it up, Exodus ends, and Numbers 7, verse 1 starts. Now, I got to move quickly. Move with me. Look at verse 1, 2, 3, 4, up through verse 9. What you will find is the record of an offering made by the leaders of Israel. There are how many tribes?
12.
So therefore, how many leaders?
12.
And they each participate in the bringing of an offering. What's the purpose of the offering? Verse 1, Moses is anointing and consecrating it, that's the sanctuary or the dwelling or the tent of meeting, and all of its furniture, that's the furniture and the furnishings. Okay, he anointed and consecrated it. the end of that verse, when he had anointed and consecrated it all, the leaders of Israel made an offering. They were the heads of the families, the tribal leaders who had presided over the census. They brought their offering before the Lord. What does the offering consist of? Six wagons and two oxes. One ox from each, one wagon from each pair. They bring those wagons up. They have a ceremony. They give four of the wagons to this group of Levites, two of the wagons to this other group of Levites. The Levites are going to be carrying everything. Don't get a wagon because they're just going to be walking and carrying all the pieces that do this. And all of this is over at verse 9. They've just had an offering, and they've had a ceremony of dedication, which as I read it, there is a reason that you might question a little bit of this, but as I read it, this is the offering and the dedication of the sanctuary, the dwelling, the tent of meeting. It has taken 9 verses. It has taken maybe an hour. Everybody okay? Look at verse 10. There is now a second offering that comes. What's this offering for? The leaders then made an offering for, that's the way my verse 10 starts. What's it for? The dedication of the altar. 9 verses, they have dedicated the dwelling, all of these gold things, all these fine linen, all these leathers, and all this kind of stuff. They've done an hour, and it's done. Verse 10, they're now going to have a ceremony to dedicate the altar. What's the altar made of? Wooden stone. And what's its purpose? What do you do at the altar? You kill things in sacrifice. You burn things in sacrifice, right? What's the altar going to smell like 3 days later? A week later, a month later, a year later, a decade later, a century later, when these sacrifices just keep going and keep going and keep going. It's going to be awful. It's going to be smelly. It's going to be rank. And they're about to have a dedication ceremony for the altar. Everybody okay? I put a book in the library some time back. The book is called How to Enjoy the Boring Parts of the Bible. It's by Philip Rosenbaum. He calls number 7 the king of the boring parts. And I want to show you why. The leaders then made an offering for the dedication of the altar. Verse 11, they brought their offering before the altar. And the Lord said to Moses, each day one of the leaders must bring his offering for the dedication of the altar. Verse 12, on the first day an offering was brought by a certain person, son of a certain person, of the tribe of... This is not Jacob's firstborn son. This is the tribe that now has prominence and leadership. What does he bring? Verse 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 tell you. And at the tail end of the 17, it says, such was the offering of, and it names the guy again. Would you look at verse 18? On the second day, who brings? This time it's Issachar. What offering does he bring? Have you seen the movie My Cousin Vinny?
Yes.
I was corrected at the end of the first hour. I now know how to do this correctly. They had an FBI agent who was coming to the FBI crime lab. He was comparing the tire tracks that were left along with the tire tracks of these young men who had been caught up and threatened with murder, accused of murder, right? And he asked the FBI crime lab, the prosecutor does, what did you learn about the rubber from the tires and the rubber from the tire tracks? And he says on the stand, do you remember the word? I got it wrong in the first hour. I'm getting it right now. He said, identical. And the prosecutor turns to the jury and he says, what was the offering on the second day compared to the offering on the first day? What was the third day? Look at it. We're now at verse 24. Verse 30. Verse 36. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day. How long does this go? This is, you almost want to say on the first day. Right? 12 days. How long did it take to dedicate the tent of meeting, the place where God would meet his people? It took an hour. How long does it take to dedicate the altar, the smelly, awful place of death? 12 days. Something's going on here. And nobody seems to be picking up on what it is. Phil Rosenbaum made me think about this. And I'm giving credit where credit is due. What do you do on the altar? You kill things. What do you do with their blood? This is big. What do you do with their blood? You sprinkle it on the mercy seat, and the channel of communication with God is opened. Except Hebrews says the priests would bring their sacrifices year after year. But Jesus took his sacrifice once. Where did he take it? Into the heavenly reality. And he put his blood on the altar. On the mercy seat once and for all. And that channel of communication is open between people and human beings that is permanent and forever. The priests are giving a yearly reenactment of this one time for all heavenly reality. This is the dedication of the cross. This is the dedication of the cross, because nobody dedicated the cross when it was used. They dedicated the replica of the cross, which was the altar.
And the sacrifice of the replica of the altar here.
The sacrifice on that altar was a model of the one sacrifice, the only one that mattered. And what was the purpose of the sacrifice? To make you realize how awful death was and how awful and ugly the price it took to open that channel of communication. Big things are happening in this little section of Exodus, and then tie in to the king of the boring parts, which suddenly isn't quite so boring, because when all those gifts had been given and the blood of the bull was taken in and it was sprinkled on the mercy seat, the last verses of Numbers tell you God spoke and the channel was open, and every high priest after had access to it. I don't think many of them took advantage of it, but it was there because the model was set. That's what we're looking at. There's a lot more, but we don't have time to look at that, and I've already taken more time than you have. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for your Son and for the one sacrifice that made it all happen. We thank you that you loved us enough to let the horror of this kind of death come to your Son, the one who was innocent and the only one who should have been spared. We thank you that you have given us clues throughout your Scripture that something so important was happening that you needed 1,000 years or 2,000 years to prepare us so that we could really understand what happened. And even then, most of us don't seem to. Help us understand the cost at which we were saved, and to then, in gratitude, live our lives before you as you call us to. Teach us not to forget. We ask all this in your Son's name. Amen.